Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Kia ora and welcome to our Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercer Spirituality Center in Epsom. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me here in the studio to talk about our center, the Mercy Sisters, our programs, or about social justice, or about the Catholic Church. Today, my visitor is Kevin McBride. Kevin, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Kia ora, Beata.
Kevin McBride has been, until recently, the responsible person for the bicultural desk, Te Kaupapa Tikangarua, for the Catholic Diocese of Auckland. Kevin has a background in teaching in secondary schools in Nelson and on Niue Island. In 1982, he joined the Evangelization, Justice and Development Commission of the Diocese of Palmerston North. From this time on, he became heavily involved in justice and peace. Among many other roles in this area, Kevin fronted a new national office for Pax Christi Aotearoa, New Zealand. From 1996 to 2014, Kevin occupied the bicultural desk at the Catholic Diocese of Auckland. He worked there under the tutelage of people like Pahina Retate and Faya Rangi Davis. Justice and Peace, Pax Christi, and bicultural desks. These are connections. They are connecting in many ways, and you can see that social justice and the Catholic Church go well together. I have invited Kevin to our studio today because we celebrate Waitangi Day in New Zealand. This is a very special day on which we commemorate the signing of the Treaty of Waitangi, Te Tiriti, as it is called in Maori. The 6th of February has been a national holiday since the 1970s. Kevin, your background in New Zealand and on the bicultural desk, can you tell us a little bit more about the historical background of the Treaty of Waitangi?
Yes, thanks, Beata. I think the starting point for this is that Aotearoa is Maori land. I think the Maori had been settled here for many hundreds of years before any other people visited. And during that time, they had, modified the culture that they brought from across the Pacific, in fact, from the eastern seaboard of Asia. And they modified that to develop a strong and settled and cultured and civilized occupation of this land. So that I think has to be the starting point. The second thing I think which is very important relating to the history of the treaty is that there was a lot of Maori initiative in the development of what eventually became the treaty. I think the first thing is the initiative relating to Pākehā visitors. Maori travelled with them to various places, including Australia, and they had a lot to do there with missionaries like Samuel Marston.
Just for the non-New Zealanders, Pākehā are the European immigrants.
Thanks, yes, sorry, sorry about that. I think the relationship with Samuel Marston was typical of relationships that Maori were taking with people that they came across in their visits around the world. And I think, so that's the second point. I think the third point is that out of those relationships came a visit to England by two very important chiefs of the North, Hongi and Waikato. They met with King George, and they got on very well together. And there were a lot of exchanges and interest in history and so on. Later on, as settlers came here, there was and started to have an impact on Maori society. There was a letter written in 1831, which asked King George to do something about the settlers, or I think it might have been King William at that stage. And that led, first of all, to the establishment of a British resident, James Busby, here. And in relationships with James Busby, Maori first of all established a trading flag for themselves in 1834. And even more importantly, in 1835, a document was developed called Te Wakaputanga, or Te Rangatiratanga, or Niu Tereni, the Declaration of Independence or Sovereignty of New Zealand. And this was done with the help of James Busby, but it also brought together, to my mind, a lot of thinking that Maori themselves had been doing about relationships with Pākehā. And that document, He Pakaputanga, I think is the real constitutional foundation of New Zealand, because it established New Zealand as an international entity, or Aotearoa as it was, or Nutereni it was called in the document, an international entity. And it was on that foundation that the Treaty of Waitangi eventually developed.
So at that time, were there two flags?
There was only the one flag, of course. Well, there was the flag, the so-called independence flag, which I think not many people know about. It's not flown very often, but it has it's a white background with a red cross on it, and up in the top right-hand corner on a blue background are four stars. And that was the actual flag of this country in 1834, and that was the flag that was represented at the signing of the treaty in 1840. So there was a lot of background to the treaty, which I think not all New Zealanders know about, but it's of critical importance when we actually come to look at the treaty itself.
And what makes the treaty so special for New Zealanders, but maybe also worldwide?
Well, I think first of all, if I can just say a little bit more about that Whakaputanga, the sovereignty document. I think that document actually set the authority of the rangatira, the leaders of the tribes in New Zealand, that set that authority in place. And so when it came to the signing of the treaty itself is actually based on it and mentions in the preamble and the first article that document. So I think we have to start at that point. Aotearoa is Māori land, and in the treaty, Māori made an agreement, or signed an agreement, with the incoming settlers. Now, going back to its importance as a document, I think it's a case of an initiative which is perhaps brought to Māori people, but it's an attempt, a genuine effort by Māori to share their land with outsiders. I think that's the importance
of it.
It's
about sharing the land. It's not taking over or anything.
Definitely
like
not,
that.
No. Yeah. And the language of Te Tiriti, the actual document in Māori language that was signed by the rangatira and by Hobson, the language of that makes it very, very clear that this is, and first of all, the second article, I should say, affirms what is in the declaration. The rangatiratanga is affirmed very clearly. The first article actually grants a limited authority to the British Crown in the form of the governor and of course representing the Queen. And that limited authority was so that that the settlers could actually be looked after by their own leaders. It gave the authority of the leaders of the British Crown to actually have some ability to look after their own people.
But also the leaders of the European settlers and the leaders of the Maori tribes, they were standing on the same level when the treaty was signed, which is quite different to many other countries.
There's a very interesting finding by the Waitangi Tribunal in recently, which was published late last year, and that particular finding shows clearly what was in the mind of the signatories, the major signatories at that time, and that was that they were willing to grant something out of the declaration, kawanatanga, a function of government. They're willing to grant that to the Queen and her officers to manage their own people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an interesting attempt on a worldwide basis of two peoples to actually find a way of sharing the resources of a land.
Yeah. For those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. We are on air every Friday morning at 8:40 on Planet FM 104.6. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk or send me an email at muffintalk840@gmail.com. My visitor today is Kevin McBride. Until recently, Kevin has been responsible for the bicultural desk for the Catholic Diocese of Auckland. He has given us an overview of the historical background of today's Waitangi Day. Kevin, we've heard a little bit about the Waitangi Day and the Treaty of Waitangi now.
Mm-hmm.
What does this have to do with your work at the bicultural desk?
Thanks. Yes, that's, I think probably some people within the church wonder why this issue is given so much importance that there is a desk for it. But the Catholic Church is not the only one which has been giving importance. And I think certainly as we've looked at the celebration of the 200th anniversary of Marsden coming here in 1814, I think the reality of this for churches has come home to us. But I think the church was actually present at the signing of the treaty. I think that's the basis. The missionaries like the Anglican missionary Henry Williams and various Methodist missionaries had quite an influence on it. Williams very clearly, but I found recently that some of the Methodist missionaries had quite an influence on the defining, if you like, intervention before the treaty was signed by Tamati Wakanene, and Wakanene had a lot to do with the Methodists. So there's no doubt there was some influence there. And Catholic Bishop Pompelier, of course, was largely responsible for the writing of the fourth article of the treaty, which is about freedom of religion and practice of religion and Maori custom. So the missionaries were very present there. So the church was there, and I think that's put upon us, upon the church's a need to honour this, what the Maori and many of the churches have stated is a covenantal agreement. It's a very, very strong and very solemn agreement, and some of the language of it is taken, language of these documents is taken from the Bible itself. You know, they say kingitanga is a word represented in the Pakapuatanga.
The kingdom of God.
It's a biblical thing. Mm-hmm. See, kingship and kingitanga were not part of Maori understanding. So the fact that these words were used shows their understanding of the Bible, and also I think their trust that the church would support them. So we have a strong obligation, if you like, to be part of that. Mm.
One of the first contacts was also with the missionaries between the Maori and the Pākehā, the European settlers.
Yep.
So that's another reason why you'd have that biblical language, because you'd have to learn the language somehow, and if you start with a Bible, then this language will influence, of course.
Of course, and the first printing done in the country, much of it was biblical, and so therefore the first language, English language, that many Maori came across was the Bible itself.
Yeah, so the printing was done also in the Pompelier House Russell.
Yes. And we can still, if you go up there, you can still see some of those, some of the old machinery and the historical reality of what that actually meant. But no, that's, I think, my mentors in this, of course, is Pa Henry Tait, and he's very clear. In fact, he made a statement to the Catholic Diocese in 1999, which is very clear on this, and he says the Church is obligated to uphold the treaty, and the nature of the obligation is to allow the chiefs the capacity to exercise their chieftainship over their lands and habitations and treasured things. And of course, that takes in so much. So we, as Church, we have to look that we haven't violated Maori understandings in things like land.
Is that part of your work at the
bicultural?
Well,
it has been. Yes, it was.
It has been. Yes,
yes.
See you at the bicultural desk, because it's only 1 month since you have left it.
There were cases, and I was occasionally approached by people in various dioceses to say, well, you know, there's been a suggestion that this church land will be sold, and so I would advise them, make sure they go back to the original owners of the land and get their agreement before it's done. So that itself was part of it. And so the relationships between Maori and church land is another very important one. And I think the idea of protecting Maori custom and all that, that comes through very clearly in Catholic social teaching. Recent popes like John Paul II have made it very clear that Indigenous people have the right to their culture and their way of looking at the world and to have that respected, their language and all things that are dear to them. Well, this is again part of the treaty.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the Catholic social teaching and the treaty, the language of the treaty, the things protected. There's a strong affinity there which should draw us as churches and to protect this for as much as we can.
So you are also the first point of contact when there's anything to do with Maori relationships or with Maori issues or when some.
I have been.
Yeah.
In fact,
who is taking over now?
Just yesterday, I was out at the Little Sisters of the Poor.
Yeah.
And some of the people there, we had a wonderful session with those people talking about some of the things I've spoken about before. Now I had an approach, the desk had an approach. As to your question of who's taking over, well, I'm not fully conversant with what's happening, but the basic move is to establish a Maori pastoral office or desk within Pompalia Centre, within the heart of the diocese. And in doing this, perhaps I shouldn't say following the example, but we're doing the same as has been done in the Palmerston North Diocese in Wellington, where they have an actual office within the diocesan centre to actually help to coordinate Maori pastoral activity. And I think that's an extremely important development, and it shows the commitment of the church to actually, in this diocese, to actually follow through on their obligations in looking after Maori culture and Maori faith. Other aspects will be transferred to the Commission for Justice and Peace,
mm-hmm.
which will set up a bicultural a bicultural working party within the commission to continue the work of education and so on.
And I think that it can be, must have been very challenging sometimes when people ask you, well, you're working at the bicultural desk, what does that mean, you as a European descendant?
Oh, yes, that's for true. That's for sure. It has been a challenge, except that I think, certainly in leadership areas, Maori are very sure about what was in the treaty and what it meant to them, particularly Catholic Maori in the north. They're very clear, but the main need has been to educate Pākehā and new migrants to the country, tauiwi, if you like, all other people, non-Maori people.
So you're one of the results?
Pardon?
You're one of the results.
Oh, well, yes, indeed, that's for sure. Yes, I had very, very, very lucky to be with the right people.
Yeah.
Particularly when I came back from New Ireland, because then I became conscientized, if you like, as to the relationships, and it was then that I wanted to advance in this area.
Yeah. And the Diocese of Auckland is very multicultural. It's I think it's one of the most multicultural dioceses. And people are coming from so many different backgrounds.
Mm.
Do you think there's still a space for the bicultural approach? You now said that there would be a Maori desk.
Yeah.
But is that Maori desk then integrated somehow in the multicultural?
I think it's very difficult to move into multicultural, particularly in this country, without some understanding of bicultural. I think if we can accept the relationship that was hoped for in the treaty, and that there'd be a respectful and relationship between the Māori and Pākehā, if we can get that one in place, it's not so difficult to add on others, if you like, or to develop it. The unfortunate thing, if we rush straight into multicultural, and one is the belittling of the status of Māori in this country. I think, you know, that can be sort of, they can, if you like, be just another minority.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been attempts by some of our political leaders to actually make that point in the past. And fortunately, the need to observe the treaty and its obligations, I think, has remained quite strong. And I think we Pākehā need to get behind Māori because if we can get that one right, multiculturalism is a much easier step to take. So I think it's still a very, very strong place.
Mm. And part of this, the bicultural commitment of the Catholic Church in New Zealand is the celebration of Mass in Te Reo Māori, in Māori language.
Mm.
Do the New Zealand priests all know enough Maori to celebrate Mass?
Oh, that's a difficult question. I have to be careful. Well, look, first of all, I can't answer for the priests and the training of priests too much, but I do know that efforts have been made in the seminaries. And my own experience on Waiheke Island as part of the cathedral parish is that the priests there are very good about bringing in aspects of Maori language. We are often greeted in te reo. The blessing at the end of Mass also is in te reo. And so that's a good start. And they're very conscious of having a Maori himine.
Maori church song?
Yes, indeed, Maori hymns.
Yeah.
And I think many of us now in Waiheke know Mō Māria by heart, because we have it quite frequently. Yeah. And so certainly in our place,
yeah,
our pastors are very good. But I think I would have to say from hearsay that I think there could still be more done.
Yeah.
To educate our priests so that they are fluent. Some are remarkably so. Pompelli himself, of course, learned very quickly, mm-hmm, and used te reo in his language. And I think we can do no better than follow his example and make it a key point in our liturgies.
Did you also try to create awareness among the people who are mass attending? Because I think that it also has to do with the congregation. If the congregation doesn't accept it, then it wouldn't really work. So if the congregation is aware of what you were saying, that it's not just another minority language, but it's a very important language for New Zealand. Mm.
Exactly.
And I think that if the congregation is behind it, like in our parish, we have had Maori Mass for 15 years, I think.
Mm. Mm.
And it's all in Maori, and people respect it because they know the background.
Mm. Mm-mm-mm. It's very good. I mean, on Niue, for example, when Barbara and I were up there, we had generally the masses were in Niuean, and so we had to learn. And other parishes I've been in, Otara, the Māori Miha and Miha, the Mass in Samoan and so on, was quite regular. And I think it's important for us to respect other cultures who've come here to help the country along, if you like. Mm-hmm. As well as themselves, I think it's important to respect their cultural backgrounds.
What was the part of your job that you liked best within these many years on the bicultural desk?
I think one of the things I liked least. Yes, I know the best was there too, but I think one of the things was the slowness of some parishes and people to actually take this on. I think it's important that we do, and it was sometimes an uphill struggle with that, the entrenchment. Interestingly enough, if I can step aside for a moment from that one, Bishop Mariu, in an intervention at the...
Bishop Mariu was the Māori bishop in Hamilton.
Yes, yes, and he made a very firm statement about how Bishop Pompeo and the early missionaries started off in a path of enculturation, where the cultures and the gospel were integrated with one another, but unfortunately, as the crown took over the country, the settlers, including Catholic settlers, went with them, and that's so that we've got a long way to come back, if you like, to that point of view. So anyway, it's sometimes an uphill struggle convincing people of the importance of this, or awakening them, should I say, to the importance of this. The best times, I think, were exposure to the Maori community and the Maori culture. I used to attend the Taitokorau Pastoral Council meetings in the north.
So these are the regional pastoral council in the north.
And we'd hold the meetings on Marae, and the exposure to Maori culture was beautiful, and also some tutelage I've had with people like Pa Henry and Rangi in Maori spirituality. Bobby Newson, of course, is another one I should mention here. Those people have been very generous in sharing their spirituality, mm-hmm, and that's awakened me to my own identity and spirituality, which mm-hmm is a huge benefit, I think, to any of us, mm-hmm, to get back into that rather than being caught up in the in the bland consumerist world that we're confronted with.
Yeah, Rangi Davis has also been very important for our Mercer Spirituality Center.
Of course.
And her son is the one who created our logo, which reflects so well what we are doing in the Spirituality Center.
Yes, yes. He also created a band across the top of a newsletter that we had for a while published in the Catholic office. And this is a wonderful artist. Oh, a great family, the Davises, yes.
Mm-hmm. I think it's often, isn't it, there's a saying from the Maori, what is most important are he tangata, the people, the people. So what you say is what you liked best was the sharing with the people.
Absolutely, And the awakening it sort of raised in me as to my own identity. Because identity is very strong with Māori, and identity with the land and Atua and so on. You know, those land, God and people are very, very strongly. And it's taken me back to, well, been back to Ireland, where my own family came from, and looked into our own family history and background, both Barbara and myself. And I think it's what we have been given to carry forward. And that's, that kind of thing has been a real treasure to have been part of that over the years.
So we'll have to be aware of our roots and aware of Waitangi Day and where it comes from, so that we don't see it just as another holiday, but that we see the importance of Waitangi Day.
Absolutely, and I think the beauty that it can bring for us too. I think Pa Henry finished off his 1999 statement by talking about enculturation, which is the bringing together and sharing of faith and culture. And he said it's the true treasure of the universal church. The beauty, sensitivity and value of Maori and other cultures in the diocese contributing towards the whole body. And I think that bringing together of cultures and sharing of their beauty and enlightenment and upliftingness and all those good things, I think that's what we have as the reward for taking part in this bicultural journey.
Yeah. What a good sentence to end with, and quoting Pa Henare,
Still lean a lot on Pa.
Thank you very much.
Mentor.
Thank you very much, Kevin, for this interview. Thank you for coming to the studio. And to our listeners, we have some events. The program is full running again. We have the meditation evenings from Monday, 9th of February again. Every Monday from 7:30 to 8:30 p.m. in our chapel, we have these meditations. Everybody is welcome to join. And if you're not experienced in Christian meditation yet, please join us for our introduction on Christian meditation in the evenings of the 12th and the 19th of February from 7 to 9 p.m. And on the 14th of February, Saturday, Edwina Gately is going to come, and she is from the United States and will share stories on and poetry on mothers, sisters, daughters standing on their shoulders. And if you're interested in Maori customs and traditions, you're welcome to join us for an evening of flax weaving with Marama Piripi on 19th of March from 7 to 9 p.m. For any information or bookings, please contact us at the Mercer Spirituality Center in Epsom at either at www.mercerspiritualitycenter.org.nz or give us a call at Auckland 09-638-6238. And I wish you all a good Waitangi Day and a blessed week ahead. And thank you, Kevin, for coming.
Thanks, Beata.